So I'm going to describe what the purpose of this initiation is, and then I'll describe what the process is. So it's important to understand why you're doing something before you do it. It's not just a ritual. In many cultures, in many religions, you have different rituals, and in many cases, people don't understand why they do things, or what they chant, or what they eat. So I'm going to describe why. So the why is, we want to become happy. Is anyone here who doesn't want to be happy? Any miserable people here? No, not a single person who wants to be miserable. So, if we want to be happy, we have to realize our happy nature, which is not only a happy nature, but a happy nature is Satchitananda, those are Sanskrit words, which mean we live forever, we have perfect knowledge, and we have amazing ecstasy, happiness, bliss, whatever word you want to use. And the bliss is so intense when one realizes their spiritual nature that our teachers, previous teachers, which are called acharyas, have actually analyzed the different types of happiness that people can have. And I'm going to talk about that. So there's actually many categories of happiness. In this world, before one takes to spiritual life, there's only like two or three categories of happiness. Little happy, a little more happy, very happy, and temporary happy. So, but in spiritual life, we're going to talk about something called bhavas. Bhavas means emotions, because emotions are what determine whether you're happy or sad or angry or whatever. So there's different categories, and I'm going to give some Sanskrit words. One category is called a vibhava. That means the thing that excites you. Not the emotion precisely, but the thing that makes you emotional. For example, for some of you, a soccer game makes you emotional. Right? Is that right? And for other people, a movie makes you emotional. For another person, if they see their mother, they become emotional, right? Another person, they may see their girlfriend or boyfriend, and then they become emotional. So this is what you see that makes you emotional is called a vibhav, jai, shishi panchatak. So in this world, and spiritually, that concept applies. So spiritually, what makes you emotional is understanding your spiritual nature and understanding the nature of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, who is called Bhagawan because he is full of all attractive features. He's most famous, most beautiful, or handsome in that case. He's most strong. He's most intelligent. So when you think of him, that excites you because he's the most attractive, right? So that's called the vibhav. Then after you get excited by spiritual life, understanding your spiritual nature, understanding the goal of spiritual life, understanding your relationship with the Supreme Krishna, then you get something called the anubhav, which means a voluntary, ecstatic, happy expression, like dancing, rolling on the ground. And sometimes people who are in spiritual life are so ecstatic that people who are not in spiritual life think they're crazy. But they're so happy. When you become happy, you act in ways that are normal or abnormal. Materialists would consider to be crazy. But that's because you're happy. And so then after that, you got what's called sattvic bhav, and that's you don't have to worry about learning the Sanskrit. That means the ecstasy that's always there because you're in the mode of goodness. There's actually three modes in the material world. Yeah, goodness, passion, and ignorance. In the mode of ignorance, you're basically always miserable. And if you really want to cultivate the mode of ignorance, you drink a lot, not water, you know, you drink, anyway, whatever. And then, or you smoke or whatever. So you can cultivate different modes, because different modes affect our consciousness and determine whether we're happy or not. So when you do those things, they don't make you happy. And the mode of passion, you know, again, soccer games. So something like that. So, but in the mode of goodness, where you're cultivating cleanliness, and you're cultivating kindness, and you're cultivating compassion and love and all these wonderful qualities, then the happiness comes from the mode of goodness, particularly if it's transcendental, makes you happy all the time. And that's called sattvic bhava. It's always there. It comes from the mode of goodness. And then there's something that's even more ecstatic, which is called, in Sanskrit, anyway, don't have to learn, vyabhachari bhava, which means that one becomes so happy that the ecstasy becomes uncontrollable. And I'm giving an example about that. One example is that you may faint in ecstasy, not only just rolling on the ground, and tears may just like spurt out of your eyes. You don't need a water pistol. You know, they just spurt out of your eyes. That's how happy you become. And anyway, so these are different symptoms that occur in someone who is becoming or is Krishna conscious. And that's really why we're doing what we're doing, because we want to be happy. And ultimately, the happiness culminates in the feeling of love. So love is the highest happiness, even transcends, so to speak, or goes beyond the happiness that we were just describing before, like rolling on the ground, jumping up in the ground, jumping up in ecstasy, tears spurting from your eyes like torrents of rain. That's the greatest pleasure. And the love we are talking about is focused not only on Krishna, who is the most attractive person we mentioned at the beginning, but it's focused on everyone. Why is it focused on everyone? Because everyone is connected with Krishna. There's an interesting verse in the Bhagavad Gita, Mami Vamsa Jiva Loke Jiva Bhuta Sanatana, which states that all of us are connected with Krishna. We're his parts and parcels. So when you have that consciousness, then you actually love everybody, because you see one family. That is, everybody is a brother and sister, like St. Francis stated, that everybody is everybody else's brother and sister, and so on. You don't hate anyone, you love everybody, you love Krishna, and life is ecstatic. So that's why we're doing what we're doing. And so how to get to that point? Okay, that's the difficult part. No, it's actually easy if one follows the process properly. The first thing, the first process of getting to that point is called chanting the names of Krishna. And the reason that that is an important part of the process, or the primary way to achieve that status, is that the name of Krishna is the same as Krishna. The word mantra, because we're talking about the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra now, the word mantra basically means to take the mind and free it from all the anxieties and depression that we're subject to now. Actually, if one reads or understands psychology, one will see the two main diseases of modern society are anxiety and depression. And this, of course, relates to the primitive mind, fight or flight, for those of you who may be studying psychology. So instead of fighting or flighting, we are getting depressed and getting an anxiety. Anxiety about what may happen tomorrow, our financial situation. Whew. It's really difficult. You know, whether you're going to get a good grade in school. You know, we communicate sometimes with our disciples who are going to the university. Oh, we're taking our test today. It's anxiety. Actually, I attended school like 200 years ago. It's hard to believe. Anyway, well preserved. Anyway, so, and I'm still in anxiety. I still have dreams of anxiety of taking the exams. Anybody who's a little older will tell you that. You know, you still wake up in the night in a sweat and think, oh my God, the exam is tomorrow. Of course, it was many years ago. So we're subject, but when one chants the mantra, the Hare Krishna mantra, or any spiritual mantra, then it frees the mind from these things. And one can actually realize their spiritual identity and rise above. Just like if you get very high in an airplane, you look down, and everything becomes shrunk. Everything. All your problems, everything just gets very, very, very little. And so, of course, what goes up must come down. Except in spiritual life. In the material world, you go up in an airplane, you have to come down. And in the material world also, if you take some remedial measure to get rid of anxiety, like you have some Prozac or some anti-anxiety thing, then when you stop taking it, your anxiety, probably more anxiety at that point. But spiritually, you're free of those things. So we chant, and Krishna's name, as I mentioned before, is non-different from Krishna. It's exactly the same as Krishna. So by chanting his name, we come in contact with Krishna, who is the source of pleasure, which is the opposite of anxiety and depression. And why is Krishna non-different from his name? Because that is his nature. It's the absolute. Namachintamani Krishna's Chaitanya Rasa Figura. Everything in this world, or everything we have, has a name, but the name is different than the object. For example, on this particular platform there's something called a banana. But I'm sure in Slovenian you have a different name for banana, no? No? It's called banana? See? I was wrong. So, one country that I was preaching in before is called Venezuela, and they call the banana cambura. So you have different names. And if you want a banana, you can't just chant banana, banana, banana. It doesn't work. Because the banana is different than the object to which it refers. The name of banana is different than the object to which it refers. But the name of Krishna is exactly the same as Krishna, because he's spiritual. And so we chant Krishna, and Krishna is there. And not only do you become happy, you become connected, you become purified, you become the mode of goodness, which gives you the happiness, but also you transcend this world by doing that, by chanting the name of Krishna. So it's the most wonderful experience. And of course, there's a few rules in chanting Krishna's names that we usually mention at the time of initiation. Things to be avoided. And we'll go through them very quickly. We avoid criticizing those, or blaspheming, as the statement is, those who are dedicated to serving the Supreme Lord. In any religion, in any culture, we just don't criticize them. In fact, we should avoid criticizing practically anybody. We can point out when someone does something wrong, but we don't want to engage in personal criticism, which is called ad hominem in Latin. That means a personal attack on someone. So that's the first thing, you avoid that. Why is that, let's say, a detrimental or a barrier to spiritual advancement? Because everyone, as we mentioned, is part and parcel of Krishna. And therefore, Krishna loves everybody. And if you mistreat anybody, Krishna may get a little angry with you. Just like if you have a brother or a sister, and you, let's say, don't treat them properly, your parents get angry, don't they? They say, treat your brother nicely. So Krishna's the same way. He's saying, treat your brother, treat your sister nicely. So the second offense probably doesn't apply to too many people here, but usually applies in India. one should not consider the names of the demigods. Of course, probably almost none of our guests understand what a demigod is. To be equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. Also, a demigod, basically, they're like people in charge of different aspects of the material creation. Just like here in this temple, we have a temple president, Ananta. Is he here? No, he's there. And then we have demigods who work under him. Like Bart Prabhu, he's one of the demigods that works under Ananta. So Ananta's the supreme. And, of course, I'm the GBC, so I'm more supreme. Anyway, so... above me is GBC body, and above me is Prabhupada, and above me is God. Anyway, so you get the idea. So a demigod means someone who works under God, or works under Krishna. So, of course, we're not from India, so we don't really have that problem of considering names of demigods to be equal to or independent of the holy name of Lord Vishnu. And the next thing to be avoided is to disobey the order of the spiritual master. The spiritual master is the spiritual guide, the spiritual teacher, and the spiritual master is not supposed to be followed blindly either. So when we talk about order, we're talking about instruction, spiritual instruction. The spiritual master doesn't run someone's life. It's not a cult here that we tell you who you should get married to, how much you should eat, what other things, what school you should go to, what clothes you should wear today, what color clothes you should wear today, what jewelry the ladies should wear. I mean, that's not the spiritual master's position. Or what stocks you should invest in. Because if you give the wrong advice and you lose your money, you're in trouble. Especially if you invest in cryptocurrency. You know what that is? No. Some of you know what it is. So, anyway, so the spiritual master gives spiritual advice, not blind following. You have a right to say, you know, what does this mean? What is the purpose of that particular advice? The next thing to be avoid is to criticize any literatures that deal in a bona fide manner with spirituality. Because there's many literatures, many different cultures. We are not sectarian. Although we have a certain culture, like we're dressed in this particular way, which is optional, in case you haven't figured that out. You can dress any way you want and be a Hare Krishna devotee, as long as you dress. Yeah, that's the one standard we require. So we talked about four of them so far. So one should not criticize literatures, spiritual literatures. The next one is one should not think that the glories of chanting the mantra are imagination. They are actually real. Next one is one should not just concoct some meaning of the Maha Mantra or mantras, spiritual mantras. The next one is one should not do what we call vikarmas and think that the mantra will save you from it. What do I mean by vikarmas? Things that go against or bring you down to a lower mode of nature, or things that have a reaction, a negative reaction. Because in this world, there's one of the laws of nature, which is for every action, there is an equal opposite reaction. You know, you studied that in science when I was in elementary school. So on the subtle or spirit, at the subtle level, there's the law of karma that everything you do has a reaction to it. If you're good, let's say you help a lot of old ladies cross streets, which is probably a pretty good idea, then you'll get a good reaction. You may win the lottery or something like that. Not that you should invest in the lottery, but... So there's certain things that you avoid that really give bad karma. And those things are like intoxication, because it puts you in illusion with an illusion in the mode of ignorance. Or another thing is eating meat, fish, or eggs. Because, as I said, as you sow, you shall reap. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So if you eat or something that used to move until you stopped it from moving, or you paid someone to stop it from moving, you could say, well, I didn't stop it from moving, I just went to the supermarket. But you paid, and the money was eventually went to someone who was a butcher, a killer. In Spanish, a butcher is called matadero, which means a killer. So you're paying for someone to kill someone else. Who is your brother? As we mentioned before, all living entities, whether they're human beings, animals, whatever, are all brothers and sisters to us. And so we should be careful about that. So that's bad karma. And we don't like bad karma because the karmic reaction for killing is you have to be killed. Like if you, let's say you like fish a lot. I'm not going to ask who likes fish. So let's say you like fish, and tonight you're eating fish for dinner. We're not going to have any here tonight. Then next life, you're going to learn how to swim really nicely. There'll be a range. You'll get some nice fins, some gills, so you can breathe underwater. You won't need a scuba tank. Fantastic. So therefore, one should avoid certain activities like, we said, intoxication, meat, fish, or eggs, gambling, because that also puts one in a lower mode of nature, and illicit sex. That means sex outside of marriage. So if you avoid these things and you go on chanting, then you're going to get a lot of spiritual upliftment. I mean, there is a process. Spiritual life means there's a scientific way to execute spiritual life, just like doing anything in this world, whether it's science, chemistry, there's a specific way to do it, a specific way to put together a car, to put together any mechanism. So spiritual life also has a specific process to execute. So anyway, so the next offense is to think that what we're doing, the chanting, this fire sacrifice, or whatever we do within Krishna consciousness, is a ritual. Because the problem with rituals is they disconnect you from the purpose. You understand? You forget why you're doing what you're doing. And when you forget what you're doing, you're not doing it with your heart. And Krishna consciousness is meant to be executed with the heart. Not that you just put your body on automatic pilot. Just like nowadays they have these cars, self-driving cars. You've heard about them before? So there was someone who was driving, or he wasn't driving, a self-driving car, and he put it on automatic pilot, and he was playing video games at the same time, and he died. And that's quite dangerous. So you don't want to put your spiritual life on self-driving, because spiritual life is executed with the heart. Remember that. So that's what the detriment or the offense on chanting, we call that, you know, ritualistic chanting, or consider the chanting of Hare Krishna to be one of the rituals prescribed in Vedic literatures or other literatures like that. And the next offense to be avoided, or the next problem that one should avoid, let's not talk about offenses, that's a heavy word. The next problem one should avoid is instructing people who may misuse spiritual knowledge or criticize spiritual knowledge, or if they get that spiritual knowledge, it may disturb their mind so much they may not be interested in spiritual knowledge. So everything has to be explained appropriately. Just like if you go to the university, you have to take certain courses before you can come to a higher level. Like if I start to explain multidimensional calculus in kindergarten to kids, you know, they'll probably become so traumatized they'll never want to take up mathematics again another day in their life, right? So you have to be careful what you explain to people. And then also one has to be careful of maintaining material attachments. What that means is as you're progressing in spiritual life, sometimes you got to let things go, like your anxiety, your depression. It's not hard. You know, because things are causing your attachments. I mean, things are causing your distress in this world. There's actually things that you're attached to that cause distress. I mean, for example, right, here's one thing that could cause me distress. I'll give you a personal example. I'm getting old. And you look in the mirror and say, oh, my God, who's that old guy looking back at you? Is it, oh. So if I'm really attached, I mean, because the soul always feels young, right? You know, if I don't look in the mirror, I feel like I'm 22. But when I look in the mirror, you get depressed. So the soul always wants to feel young, youthful. And if you're on the material platform and attached to the gross, you know, gross means like the more tangible aspect of reality, then you can get really depressed. So if you give up that attachment, then you can enter into the spiritual plane, and then you don't worry about those things. You just stop worrying so much, and then you don't have anxiety or depression anymore. So one should try to give up those things, not maintain attachments. And finally, it's one should be attentive. while they're chanting. Attentive means to give your heart. While you're chanting, you should be thinking of what you're doing while you're doing, and then you'll make more and more spiritual advancement. Then, so those are the things to be avoided, and the positive things can be understood by studying Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teachings. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself, who appeared 500 years ago, and he taught us how to execute devotional service. He wanted to become a devotee, because it's so nice to be a devotee of Krishna that God became a devotee. That's pretty cool, isn't it? Normally you think that being God is, wow, it's great. You get whatever you want, whenever you want, from whoever you want, and nobody could argue with you or they get killed. Wouldn't that be nice? I mean, to be God, you got it made. I mean, it is nice, of course, not one of the things I want to do. But it's nicer to be a devotee of God because you get to exchange loving, what we call mellows or relationship with God. There's different relationships that one can have in the spiritual plane. Just like in this world, we have all these relationships, which tend to be a little temporary. Just like the other day, one of my disciples contacted me that her dog passed away, so I had to send her my condolences, take the ashes to the Ganges, and do a whole ceremony for her dog. Anyway, so we should love the dog, obviously, but when you have a relationship with the eternal person, then there's no taking it away. It's not, you don't lose it at any point. It's pretty nice. So it's better to have that relationship. And there's different, wait a second, let me talk about different types of relationships we can have. You can have, just like relationships in this world, you can have a relationship of just adoring Krishna. Oh, how nice he is. And you can have a relationship of serving Krishna. Oh, how nice it is to serve Krishna. You can have a relationship to become Krishna's buddy. You can put your arm around God and say, how are you doing, buddy? You can punch him in the shoulder if you want. That's pretty nice, isn't it? I mean, who's a better buddy than Krishna? As Krishna says in the Gita, in 5th chapter, text 29, he says, Bhoktaram tapasam sarva lokamesham suridam sarva bhutanam ketvam mam shanti mrichati. That if you really want to be peaceful and happy, you understand that Krishna is the best friend, suridam sarva bhutanam. He's your best buddy. So, and then you can have a relationship with Krishna, if you like, as your child. That's a really strong relationship. Like you see, the mother and father's relationship with the kid is just like incredibly strong. They would give their lives for the sake of their children. It's interesting. I was just hearing about that. Yeah, I have one of my disciples, his son just went and joined the army. And so he's moving to the army base with his wife and giving up his home just so he can be at next. I mean, that's love. That's good. I'm not denying it's good. So one can have that relationship with Krishna. And then one can also have a relationship of what we call conjugal love, where one becomes Krishna's like deep, intimate lover. And so that's Krishna consciousness. So God himself wants to enjoy the relationship with himself, so he's so, because he's so attractive. I don't know if any of you have ever heard of this person called Narcissus. No? Any? Narcissus, you heard of him? Yeah, it's a very interesting story. That he was, his girlfriend was named Echo. Anyway, this is Greek mythology. It's not true, but it's just a story. His girlfriend was named Echo, and he was so attractive, he looked at his reflection in the water, and he just kept looking, and he couldn't stop looking at his reflection in the water, and his poor girlfriend just died, and she became an echo. Anyway, it's not a true story. Don't quote it. It's from Greek mythology. But Krishna, of course, his girlfriends don't die. But Krishna looks at himself, and he thinks, what an attractive person. So in order to enjoy his own beauty, his own attractiveness, in order to appreciate a relationship with himself, what does he do? He appears as a devotee, and that is Hare Krishna. Wow, welcome. So Krishna appears as a devotee, and that Sri, here he is. Wow. That's pretty interesting, yeah. Isn't it? You talk about someone, then he appears. So that's Lord Chaitanya in the middle there. And of course, Lord Chaitanya appears with his associates, Lord Nityananda, Dvaitacharya, Gadadhar Pandit Goswami, and finally Srivas Thakur. So, in order to enjoy, as I said, he appears like a devotee, and when he appears like a devotee, he has a secondary purpose, which is to teach us how to be a devotee. Because when God becomes a devotee of himself, he's a perfect devotee, better than us. So therefore, he has elaborated on the practices and principles of becoming a devotee, and specifically there's eight prayers or poem that describe these principles, and they're called, this poem is called the Shikshashtika. So someone should study the Shikshashtika in order to understand how to chant with the proper mood. And of course, one of the verses in the Shikshashtika, which is I usually recite at the time of initiation, is the verse Ayananda Tanuja Kinkuram Patitam Mam Vishame Bhavam Budo Kripya Tapa Padapankaja Sita Duli Sadrasam Pachintaya. O son of Nanda Maharaj, that's Krishna, I am your eternal servant, but somehow or other I've fallen into this world of anxiety. That's called Kunta in Sanskrit. Kunta. The spiritual world is called Vaikunta, no anxiety. So somehow or other I fall into this horrible ocean of anxiety and depression. Somehow or other, fix me up as one of the atoms at your lotus feet. Take me away. Save me. Isn't it? If you understand you're drowning, you'll always be crying out, save me, save me. And of course, Krishna also sends down life preservers to save us as we're drowning. And those are the devotees of Krishna. We have in our society, our founder Acharya, His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is what we call an avatar. That means he came down. You've all seen the movie Avatar, yeah. So, but that's different. That's not what an avatar. The word avatar means to cross down, to come down. So Prabhupada has come down to this world being sent by Krishna as Krishna's life preserver. You know, Krishna's throne is his life preserver. To get out of this world, we should just say, Krishna, save me. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And by proper chanting, we can go back to the spiritual world and enjoy forever. So that's the process of Krishna consciousness. And those who are taking initiation will be making certain promises to follow these principles, which I mentioned before. No meat, fish, eggs, no intoxication, no illicit sex, no gambling. And to chant a minimum number of rounds a day, which in our society is 16 rounds. A round means that we have these beads, and each strand of beads has 108 beads on them, in the strand. And so to go around once is a round, and in each bead you go, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. And depending on the speed that you chant, it can take anywhere from 5 minutes to an hour to chant around. But we usually advise about 7 minutes chanting around. And you can finish them in 2 hours. And when you finish them, you feel so good. And you have no anxiety. And you're ready to conquer the world. Isn't it? Wouldn't you like to be able to conquer the world? Transcend the world? Be happy forever? So, that's what we're offering. It's a very simple process. And you can just, you can continue doing your, whatever you're doing in life, as long as you're not a butcher. You can continue with your own lifestyle. You don't have to move in the temple. You don't have to shave your head. That was the hardest thing for me. Because I was from the 1960s, and I had long hair, long beard. And so, you don't have to do those things. You just chant and follow these simple processes, and I guarantee you'll be happy. Okay? So now we'll proceed with the name-giving and promise-taking section of the initiation. It's all right? And everyone gets who gets initiated gets a set of Hare Krishna beads. And these are the beads. These are actually made of a special wood, which is called Tulsi. She's a sacred plant in India, and she is an incarnation of a great devotee of Krishna. So, we have two devotees taking initiation. So, ladies first. Lisa, so first you go and offer obeisances to Panchatattva. Okay? You know how to offer obeisances? Yeah, Panchatattva. You get up and offer obeisances to Panchatattva, and I guess it's hard to go all the way back to the... She can do that? Okay. So Panchatattva, these are deities of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who I described previously, and that's the deity of our founder, Srila Prabhupada, who passed away in 1977, and we were all following his direction. The information he has given us has come down into cyclic succession. He has not invented anything. There's a whole chain of spiritual leaders, spiritual masters, since time immemorial, if you can make your way back. Since time immemorial, beginning with Krishna himself, and then Krishna with his first disciple, Lord Brahma. Brahma, his disciple, Narada. Narada, his disciple, Vyasa. I'm not going to tell you everybody in between. All the way down to the present-day spiritual masters, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Gaurakishore, I miss Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Gaurakishore Das Babaji Maharaj, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, our spiritual master, and ourselves who are representing Srila Prabhupada and giving initiation. This is the continuing chain of disciplic succession. I was initiated by Srila Prabhupada in 1971, and I took sannyas in 1978, and the offer basis is here first. Okay, so what obeisances means that she's offering respects to the previous acharyas and her spiritual master. Okay, so Lisa, what are the four regulative principles?
No eating meat, fish, or eggs.
Yeah.
No illicit sex. No intoxication. No gambling.
And how many rounds do you chant a day?
Minimum 16.
Minimum 16. Okay. And on a codicil, it's good to try to chant more if you have time. And Liz is a very good student. She graduated, not graduated yet, but she's an honors student at the university. So we're very happy that she's now taken initiation. So your name, you get the beads with your right hand. So your name now is Lalita Sundari Devi Dasi. So, Lalita Sundari Devi Dasi Ki Jai. Okay. Nice name. So, next victim, Philip. Okay, the deities, enter the Prabhupada. The offering of obeisances is a sign of humility. It's very difficult to be humble nowadays. But when one's humble in regard to someone like Krishna, God who is... Supreme Personality of God, and then it's very easy. Or just someone like Srila Prabhupada. Hey, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Hare, Rama Rama, Rama Hare Hare. And also, when they take initiation, they make their promises. I, as their spiritual master, am making them a promise to, if they follow, to take them back to the spiritual world. And if they don't make it in this lifetime, I got to come back and find them again. Or send someone. I got an option, you know. Send a text message or something. WhatsApp. It's all right. Okay. And Philip is a very nice devotee, dedicated to chanting. He leads kirtans very nicely, knows the philosophy. He's one of the star devotees here. right? Okay, Philip, and what are the regulated principles?
No gambling, no illicit sex, no intoxication, and no meat eating.
What about fish?
Also no fish.
What about eggs?
Also no eggs.
Okay, good. So you... And how many rounds do you chant every day?
Minimum 16.
Okay. We always try to chant a little more on a codicil. On a codicil, when I have time, I chant 64. And that's really nice. Get really enlivened. But may not be possible if you're doing a lot of other things in life. So your name, get the beads with your right hand, and your name now is Gadadhar Pandit Das. Gadadhar Pandit Das. So, Gadadhar Pandit, in Chaitanya's pastime, Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, a little over 500 years ago, he is an incarnation of Srimati Radharani who assisted Lord Chaitanya, and the deity of Gadadhar Pandit is up there, but that's not Gadadhar Pandit Das. You're Gadadhar Pandit Das, which means servant. And also, you know, also, Lita Sundari Devi Dasi. You're not Lalita. Lalita is the name of one of Radharani's primary associates, Lalita and Vishakha, and Sundari means most attractive. So she is serving Srimati Radharani in her service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. Okay. So now we can proceed? Oh, bhajans, okay. While you start the fire, okay. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.